Hey y'all, welcome back. This episode is pretty much if you grew up without much guidance, whether that was from a mother, family, or just a solid, support system, you probably had to figure a lot of random but important things out on your own. And let me tell you, Google was basically my parent. So today I decide I'm going to share with you 25 things I had to Google or I should have Googled because no one taught me. And I don't think I'm really alone on this. Maybe I am, who knows? But I feel like Google is everyone's best friend in some kind of way. So some of these are funny, some are life-changing, and some make me question how I even survived. So let's get into it. The first question I have is, first off, I kind of knew how to boil an egg, is how do you boil an egg? The biggest question, how do you know if the egg is done? Because, I know you throw it in a pot and you kind of hope for the best and let it sit for hours. And granted, I never Googled this. I just kind of winged it and I let it boil until it cracked. But I always had an issue peeling them. And it's because I didn't do this one specific thing that you should have done after you boiled an egg to make it easier to peel the shell off. So I'll read you what Google says. It says, place eggs in a saucepan and cover with cold water. Bring to a bowl, reduce heat, and simmer for 9 to 12 minutes. Cool under cold running water. I don't time anything. Just like I don't measure any seasoning. It's all from taste and feel is kind of how I do it. But I recently found, and this was like within the last year, and I should have Googled it because it says cool under cold running water, and this would have helped me peel 10 years ago if I was going to eat a boiled egg. So I started letting the cold water run in my pot with the eggs for like 5 minutes straight. So the egg completely cools down. I just kind of leave it there and forget about it and let that sucker cool. And then it's just the easiest thing to peel an egg. Like, it just comes right off when you're ready to eat that sucker. So, should have Googled, didn't Googled, did everything based off feel and look, make sure that egg was cracked before I took it out of the hot water, and then I would just pretty much throw it on a plate and then dry it off and then try peeling while it's hot, which is not the best thing to do because then your egg is just kind of crumbling as you're peeling. The next question is, how do you know if chicken is fully cooked? Because growing up, we never used a meat thermometer. Again, it was all about look and feel and taste, which is probably not the best thing with chicken because no one is trying to die from salmonella. Okay. So, anyways, Google says, use a meat thermometer. Chicken should reach an internal temperature of 165. My husband started checking my chicken because I never tested my chicken. I just kind of got a feel on how long it's been, the look of it. And I might like cut it a little bit in half, especially when you fry chicken. All I would do is like kind of, I figured it. I never understood, like, as I like started playing with food and figuring how to cook and stuff, I would just kind of put my fork in the fried chicken, and if the, when you push it down in the grease more and it like sizzles like really loud, then I just feel like it wasn't completely done. And then if it was kind of not sizzling just really loud, then I was like, oh, maybe we're getting close to done. Or if it looked kind of done, I never tested my chicken. So my husband was kind of worried on that, so he started using a meat thermometer, and sure enough, I was like right at 165, so I mean, the feel and look, I was doing good, and I haven't had any food poisoning from any of my chicken that I cook. But now I do test the chicken just to be on the safe side, because I just rather be on the safe side than not. So And it probably makes him feel more comfortable that when I test it, especially if we're grilling. I never really grill. I was good at testing my chicken with frying, but we kind of try cutting out all the fry food and eat healthier. So I started doing that. Next question is, how do I pick the right bra size, or do I just keep guessing until I find one that doesn't, like, you know, feel like a torture device on me? Yeah, this one I still kind of guess. But again, it's just like a never ending battle for comfort, pretty much. I did go to Victoria's Secret one time and they measured me. And when they told me the size, I thought they were crazy. Because, like, I did not think, I don't know, unless it's like skinny girl size, and I don't know, I was just kind of like blown away by what the size of bra they told me that I needed. But anyways, I just always went to Walmart and guessed on the bra size, and if it fit, it fit. It didn't, and I would just go back, get another bigger size. So that's how I was testing them out. But Google says measure your band and bust, then use a sizing chart to find the perfect fit. I slowly started learning this. I kind of do this now because good bras are expensive, so I'd much rather get the right size instead of having to deal with returning and then now. So that helped. And then I had to figure out how to measure myself in like the right area, like where. So I had to Google that as well. Another one I didn't really understand was, what does business casual actually mean? Well, you know, because it was either me showing up at a work event like I'm going to church, or which probably was somewhat, I guess, business casual, maybe too fancy, or like I was going into the woods, because I always wear boots and jeans and a t-shirt, up here sweatshirts because it's cold. But there's no jeans in business casual, which is, I think, is ridiculous, because I love jeans and not slacks or whatever you wear. But Google says business casual means dress pants, which I don't like, or skirt, which I don't like, with a button-up shirt or blouse, no jeans or sneakers. Don't care much for the sneakers, like my boots, but I much rather wear jeans. And I struggled with that one quite a bit. Apparently nowadays leggings go with business casual, as long as you have a decent shirt on top and it's not so revealing. This one I never Googled. Maybe I should have Googled. And I think at the end of the day, no one really cares anymore about, how do you fold a fitted sheet? Because I still don't know how. I just pretty much roll it up and shove it in the closet and boom, bada bing, and it's gone. It's done. It doesn't matter. But Google says fold the sheet in half, tuck the corners into each other, and then fold again to a rectangle. My grandparents, I remember they used to fold the folded sheet or fitted sheets. And yeah, I feel like it was a waste of time. Just roll it up and throw it up in there, because you can get that sucker down, smash it down where it you still have room. You don't really need to fold it. But I guess if you want it to look nice, just put a comforter on top of it. Then you don't see a wide fitted sheet. So problem solved, right? And it's in a closet. No one should be opening that closet anyway. Now this one, I was kind of guessing for the longest time. So it's pretty much, how much should I tip? Because math, social anxiety equals disaster, plus not having any money, not want to go broke. Don't want to be too greedy, because that's how they make their money, the waitresses. So I did figure this out, because I was a waitress at one point, and I wanted to know how much people should be tipping me as well. But I also wanted to do return the favor if I was at a restaurant. I thought delivery drivers were like full hourly rate wage. And maybe they are, but I still tip them something. But I never really tip takeout, which maybe it should. But I just feel like all they do is give me the bag, and because I worked in the industry, so like they don't do much. They're not servicing you and taking care of you. So I kind of, it depends. Like my hairstylist, I'll tip her, or my nail, if I go get my nails done, I'll tip them. But I'm very kind of, if you're getting a good, decent hourly wage, why am I tipping you kind of deal? But anyway, Google says tip 15 to 20% for restaurant services, 10 to 15% for delivery, and 10% for takeout. I never tipped takeout as a kid, so I'm sure they were really mad at me, or when I was in high school. I never had any deliveries because I was always out and about. So that was fairly new. But when I would go to the restaurant, I would probably tip like $2, which maybe was kind of cheap. And they were probably pissed at me. Then again, I didn't have that much money, so I probably shouldn't have been going out in the first place. But I learned to tip a decent wage just because I became in that industry and I was upset if I didn't even get at least $5 from doing a table. Because I was only getting maybe $2 an hour. So all my money came from tips. So I'm very generous to waitresses, especially the good ones. The bad ones, I kind of just like, you're getting only 10% if you can't perform good. But so just learn to have better attitude with me, I guess. But I haven't run into really a bad waitress. They all been great because their money is tips. But I do have noticed within probably the last 3-4 years, everywhere you go is a tip jar. So gas stations, tip jar. That's where I've really noticed it. Cause I'm like, why do they have a tip jar? Some, I guess cashiers at different stores have tip jars. And I'm like, they do not need a tip. I guess coffee houses, they do have a tip jar, which I'll tip them because they're still doing a service. They're making coffee and their probably hourly wage isn't high. Anyways, so I kind of pick and choose now where I tip. Obviously, waitressing, 100% tip and things like that. But far as like gas stations and other services that I think that I shouldn't have a tip jar, I don't tip. Okay, so the next one is, and this I learned the hard way. Can I put dish soap in the dishwasher? Well, the answer is no, because my kitchen filled with bubbles. My dishwasher started bubbling because I didn't have the right dishwasher soap. So I was like, you know what? I need these dishes clean. I'll just put a little, I put a little bit of Dawn dish soap in there. And next thing I knew, I seen bubbles coming out. And I was like, oh no. I did take a picture of it. I should find that picture and I'll put it up on there. But it was still one of those things that I just stopped the dishwasher and I had to clean up and it became a mess. So Google says no, dish soap creates too many bubbles and can damage your dishwasher. Okay, so something I did, and it didn't damage it. And don't take this advice in case it does damage your dishwasher if you didn't have dish soap or you don't have money to go get dish soap. I end up mixing, after that happened, I end up putting a little bit of baking soda with my Dawn dish soap in the dishwasher. So then bubbles wasn't coming out. I think it cleaned my dishes. It worked. And it didn't mess up the dishwasher, but maybe don't try it. But I had to figure it out because I wasn't going to like clean. I need my dishes clean. I didn't want to hand wash it. So I just did baking soda and dish soap and it worked. This one I always struggled with as a teen and obviously still do because my hair is pulled up. How do I make my hair look like it's from a salon and not like I just rolled out of bed pretty much? Because it would just be so nice if I can just roll out of bed, put the magic hair potion in and bam, I just look like I just came out of the salon. But Google says, use the right shampoo, blow dry your hair with a round brush, and finish with a shine serum. Mistake I did. round brush because I didn't even look up how to do this. I had a round brush and I, because it's going to the salon, you see them, how they kind of turn and do with your hair. Well, I did that and my hair got all wrapped up in it. It got stuck and it took hours to get that stupid brush out of my hair. So lesson learned on that. Don't wrap your hair in the round brush. Just kind of smooth it out and not wrap it, because I thought you wrapped it in, and yeah, that was not good. So I learned a lot of these by just bad experiences instead of Googling, because back then I did Google stuff. And these are things I should have Googled or at least watch a YouTube video on, but I didn't. So I'm trying to save you from all these messes. If you don't Google everything or think about it, and you just, if you're a doer at the moment, because that's what I am. I just do at the moment and figure it out along the way. And then eventually I do Google it, and then I look and I'm like, oh yeah, I made a big mistake. So yeah. Next one is, how do I get stains out of clothes? Now I did do Google this because I would ruin my shirts. I would think a washing machine would take it out, but they don't. So Google says use a stain remover and wash in the hottest water, safe for the fabric. So that's something I didn't read either, is, like the temperature of water for certain fabrics, because some of my clothes shrunk. So it's good to like know what material you have for clothing, especially sweaters, if they're not t-shirts, if they're not pre-shrunk or whatever they try doing nowadays. I ruined a lot of my clothes actually, which cost me so much more money. So this one was very important and I did not know, because my first year of dealing with this was a mess. How do you do taxes? So I don't remember where I went or what I did with taxes, but I remember if you ever had like any identity stolen, like your identity was stolen or your social security, like anything, the IRS will send you a PIN. You got to have that PIN if you're going to do taxes. I didn't know that. I was like, okay, why is the IRS sending me this? I'll throw it away. Worst mistake of my life, because that whole year was a nightmare to do taxes. I actually just didn't do taxes that year. So if you get an IRS piece of paper that says this is your PIN, save that paper for taxes, because calling the IRS is ridiculous. I've called them probably for a whole week straight, and I was on the phone with them, not even on the phone, just on hold for like 3 hours, and I would get annoyed and hang up. And then finally that first year, I said, I'm not doing my taxes. So I didn't do my taxes. I waited to the next year to get the PIN again and do my taxes for the 2 years. And I felt like it gave me ulcers in my stomach because it stressed me out so bad. I was just so annoyed with it and pissed off, and I hated taxes, and I still obviously hate taxes, but I hate it. Like, it's just, oh my God, it's just a mess. So Google says, and to like know what a W-4, W-2, and a 1099 is, because obviously I was always a W-2 until this year. This first year I was a 1099. So Google says a W-2 is for employees, a 1099 is for independent contractors, a W-4 helps your employer know how much tax to withhold. Something else to know, you can do tax turbo or whatever if you, you're a W-2. But if you make a certain amount of money a year, find a good CPA, which is an accountant, because they can help you and teach you, because obviously taxes are always changing, laws are always changing, bills are always changing. And I, about 3 years ago, because I got laid off from, or actually it's been 5 years ago now. Holy cow. I got laid off from my job and I had unemployment and they were supposed to take taxes out of my unemployment. They didn't take taxes out of my unemployment because I always try paying taxes because I do not ever want to pay in. Well, when I went to an accountant and I gave him everything, he realized that I wasn't paying taxes on my unemployment for some reason. So he actually told me to wait because they were passing a bill where you don't have to pay taxes on it. At the time, it was like the COVID pandemic crap. So that actually saved me from paying in a lot of money by him having that knowledge. So if anything like that happens, I would just go to an actual person that actually pays attention to the laws, that, you know, pays attention to the changing of the IRS. Like, this is always changing things, you know, and sometimes it could save you money. Yeah, you're paying them maybe $200-$300, but it's worth it if you get great advice compared to going to HR Block or Liberty Mutual, whatever those other tax places are. You're paying them like $150 to $200, and all they do is enter shit in and don't tell you, like, no advice, or they don't help you at all. And they honestly, I think they screw you, because I went to one and I'll never go back to any of those again. I won't go to any of those kind of tax people. I'll just go to a CPA, or depending on the money or stuff, I'll just do how much money we make, I guess, that year. I'll do TurboTax. But this year's a little different because I was a 1099, so I needed a good accountant to help me. Another one is, how do you open a bank account? The thing is, it gives you anxiety not knowing, like, what to do, what to say, or how to answer questions. So I went into a good bank. I kind of like did my research on banks because, I just heard different things at different bank about different banks at the time when I was young. So I found a good bank that would, because let's get for real, like, early 20s, you're going to the ATM a lot. Like, you're not going to go to the bank pull out cash, especially if you're at a bar or at a festival or at a concert. But those ATMs have fees. Well, the bank I go to will refund those fees up to a certain amount for the year. So, and then there's a lot of, like, not having things, like certain paperwork to open the bank account. So it was just a lot of, like, trying to figure it out and just very stressful and annoying. But Google says, visit your bank, provide an ID and proof of address and make an initial deposit. Easy, right? Yeah. But when you go in there, anxiety's up in the air and you're just like, don't really know, because there's so many different checking accounts and savings accounts, like certain types, and really read the details for sure. Whatever they give you, don't just kind of go with what they say. Just, I would read certain details and ask questions. Okay, I never Googled this. I think it's good to Google it because sometimes you just don't know what you don't know at the end of the day. How do I know if my friendship is toxic? I never thought a friendship was toxic. None of my friendships were toxic, but looking back, some of them were. So usually, especially the friends that only called me when they needed something. So then it made me, and that's my own, like, goes back to my trauma, like my own, like, oh, you're betraying me, or I'm not going to trust you anymore. So I was already, like, had my guards up with that person, but I would always be there for that person. But Google says signs include manipulation, lack of support, and draining energy, is what some of my friends had. So I just kind of distanced myself. I never, like, cut them out completely at the time. I just kind of distanced, and then eventually we just go our separate ways and do our own thing. So this is a question, because I'm not good with sympathy, or I don't do good with sad, awkward moments. I get very awkward and just like, I want to run away. I can't be here. So what do you say when someone dies? Because you need help, you know, you want to be supportive and you have no clue how to handle grief. Google says, say something heartfelt like, I'm sorry for your loss. I'm here for you. I always thought saying sorry for your loss was kind of like a lot of people say it. So I just would stay quiet. And I didn't speak. I just like hugged them and wouldn't say a word because I'd be so awkward. But yeah, that's something good to know. Just say something sweet, hug them, say I'm here for you, and just be there for that person. This one I should have figured out beforehand. This one I found out the hard way. How do I build credit? Because maxing out your credit card doesn't help if you can't pay your credit card. And not only that, credit cards have interest. So some of the interest is, depending on where you get your credit card, that interest could be 10%, 5%, 8%, 15%, who knows? So it's good to know your interest rate on your credit card as well, because it will be a never-ending debt that you can't get out of. And my credit went to shit very fast. So that's good to know. Building your credit. Google says pay bills on time. Keep credit utilization below 30% and avoid unnecessary debt. I did pay my bills on time, but that really doesn't make a big difference in your credit score if you have a lot of credit cards maxed out and you barely pay and you're just making the minimum monthly payments. You're going to stay, or actually majority of the time it lowers and they may or stay like right at whatever you are at the beginning. So it doesn't build anything. It doesn't help. So yeah, don't max out credit cards, or maybe just have one credit card for like all your subscriptions or something and where it's easily paid off. What do I do if I feel overwhelmed? Because I never understand how to manage stress, obviously in a healthy way. So if I feel overwhelmed, I was going out drinking and having my fun, and then obviously going in, you drink too much and then you get in your feelings and emotions and you start like having a bad night after the fact. But Google says, take a deep breath, break tasks into smaller steps, and talk to someone for support. Yeah, so I guess when I take deep breaths, I'm just like, oh, you know, like mad. So I know I did that a lot as a kid or when in my early 20s, and I probably should have took smaller steps to complete, you know, the easiest tasks first before the ones that bills or whatever that stress me out more. Just kind of, you know, I don't know. Like I said, probably should have took smaller steps. But again, that's just not like, that's just like your environment. You see how your family or your mom or your dad react to stress, then you just do that, what they do. So it's just, again, trying to break that cycle. The importance of an emergency fund and how to start one. So this one I learned a lot of hard ways because I always had a car breakdown, or I didn't have a car, or I never had extra money. But then again, it didn't help that I had a lot of debt. So it was a never-ending cycle. I should have at least saved $30 a paycheck. Like, I could have definitely did that. Like, I could have saved some of those drinks I would buy at the bar and put that money into a savings account instead. I just spent it. But Google says, start by saving a small percentage of each paycheck, aiming for 3-6 months of living expenses. Eventually, that will build up. Definitely it's good to have it. Try to at least have $1,000 or so, in, you know, if you can have more when you're in your early 20s. But I think that's a lot when you're in your early 20s, because insurance is high because you're young, freaking rent's high just because of how the world is now. It's just pay sucks. So if you can have $1,000, I think that's a win. How do you negotiate salary? And I have talked about this in previous podcasts. Because if you know your worth and you know your work ethic and you know you have that knowledge, yeah, let's just not accept whatever they throw at you. Kind of go back and be like, well, this is what I've done, and I think I'm worth more, or I'll prove it to you that I'm worth more. But Google says, research industry standards, highlight your accomplishments, and practice before the conversation. Never practice before the conversation. I would just kind of be in the moment. I was very outspoken, blunt person. And I became even more outspoken, blunt person when it came to interviews because I knew what type of work environment I wanted to be in, and I wasn't about to deal with micromanaging. So I think it's good to just know what you want, and especially if you know you need a positive environment, because it saves you from a lot of job hopping at the end of the day. So, and then what's the difference between a therapist and a life coach? One has license, the other one just obviously gives good vibes. So, I've heard of life coaches. I just assumed it was more like how to figure out life, I guess. I really don't know what I thought. I just thought, obviously, I always went to a profession because I thought they went to school and they should know how to handle my own, like myself. But Google says, therapists are licensed professionals who address mental health issues, while life coaches focus on personal goals and self-improvement. Obviously, life coaches are more your support system, which I find, if you find like a good community, not like a life coach isn't good, but why waste that money on a life coach when you can just find good friends, a good, you know, little support group, and have them help you with your, and like support one another on your personal goals and self-improvement, and then go to a therapist to help you grow and heal from your trauma. So, that was good. I did this a lot. How do you write professional emails? I try to not. So obviously you're used to texting. Your words in texting are obviously not spelled out correctly, or all the way. So that's how I would type. And then obviously I would get like grammar check and they like corrected everything, but it still wasn't in like a good way. Now, back then we didn't have it. Now we have ChatGPT, and that shit makes you sound professional. So I actually use that from sending any emails. But Google says, use a polite greeting, be clear and close with a respectful sign off. Yeah, I don't know. Use ChatGPT because they make you sound pleasant. Even if you want to send like a nasty email because someone didn't like do what they wanted or do what you needed them to do, get ChatGPT. Like, just say you wanted this, really make my point across, but in a professional way, and bam, it's like the best. I never did this one. I just kind of ran away from my feelings. But how do you get over a breakup? Well, you just need to, well, Google says, allow yourself to grieve, seek support, and focus on self-care during the healing process. I guess I just always partied. Probably not the healthiest way. This Google had like a right idea of what you should have probably done after a breakup, especially in your teens or high school or early 20s, because you're younger, your emotions are woo everywhere, and you might be so in love with that guy. In reality, he was just toxic, and you found the love of your life 10 years later, and you actually look back and was like, wow, I cried over that person. Can't believe I wasted freaking 3 months on him. These are more deep and thought out Google searches. Maybe all these I probably should have Googled because I probably wouldn't have been like a spiral mess. Granted, I had my own emotions and trauma and toxicness that I was getting through, but by Googling this, I probably would have, it saved me a lot of like, maybe time. I don't know. I can't even tell you. But what does self-love actually mean? Because what is, like, I mean, do we think about self-love? No, I don't think about self-love. I just think it's kind of, I thought it was like pampering myself, like going to get my nails done and feeling a little bit confident because I went to the tanning bed. But doing that wasn't really fixing my low self-esteem. So at the time, it made me feel good. But then obviously something would happen, like maybe say a day later. And then I'm just like, ugh, not really. I don't feel that great anymore. And I hate myself. Negative thoughts about yourself. So Google says self-love means accepting and respecting yourself, making choices that nurture your well-being, and setting boundaries. Nothing I did. I just spent more money, which put me in more debt. So it was just like a revolving door that never ended. And I was just completely going down toxic cycles. How do you forgive someone who never apologized? This one, I'm slowly still working on. It's more of like forgiving my mom, because she'll never apologize, obviously, because she is so in denial. But at the end of the day, I understand the kind of person she is. So I think I'm slowly accepting and forgave her. I don't know, because I still get triggered. So I really don't know if it's like forgiving or just like trying to accept it. I don't know. Still working, still trying to figure that out. But Google says forgiveness is a choice, not for them, but for your peace of mind. Let go of resentment and move forward. So I think I forgive, because I really don't have that much resentment, but I still get triggered on times. So I don't know. I need to talk to therapy about that one. So I can see if I actually forgave or not. Why do I feel like I have to make everyone happy? Again, that goes back to your early childhood. You're a people pleaser, and you got to try to unlearn. And slowly, the more people that burned me throughout life, every person that burned me now, except for my husband, but I'm not a people pleaser, and I won't go above and beyond on some things when I actually probably should for him, because he's actually been there quite a bit. But I just don't have that I don't have that feeling like I need to do this anymore. So I don't. But if I did, it would probably make him feel really good at times. And because he probably would feel appreciated. So I probably should start kind of going above and beyond for him, because he actually deserves it, rather than people pleasing toxic people that didn't deserve it. But that just goes back from just being burned so many times that I'm just like, don't want to give all my energy and pleasing someone. You just get resentment, maybe. I don't know. Or just not lack of trust. I don't know. Maybe I should go talk to my therapy about that as well. Or a therapist about that as well. Anyways, Google says this may stem from low self-esteem or fear of rejection. Setting boundaries and prioritizing your needs can help. Yeah. That can help. Oh, here we go. How do you change a tire? Because, you know, that AAA or whatever, they'll probably be there now. But back in the early 20s, it wasn't like people did stop for you and stuff. And nowadays, I don't think it's safe. So just figure out how to change your damn tire, and don't call anyone and everyone has a cell phone. So call someone, you know, if you're like close to, you know, in the same hometown and stuff. But if you don't know how to change a tire, Google says use a jack to lift the car, remove the lug nuts, replace the tire with a spare, and tighten the lug nuts in a star pattern. I never tightened them in a star pattern. I just like went around and around and around till they were tightened. So that's good to know now, actually, star pattern. Okay. How do I heal from childhood? I'm still trying to understand. Because obviously healing is a process, and sometimes we don't ever know where to start. But luckily I had this mom figure that gave me a good therapist, because she knew I was not doing good. So it was good to have like someone that was looking out on the outside, that seen the signs, and that actually came up and said, this, you need to do this, or was there. So Google says therapy, self-reflection, and building a support system and key to understanding and healing from past trauma. Which the support system, that's why I created this podcast, so we can all support one another. So, yeah, that was quite a few questions. It actually I thought this was going to be like a short podcast, but we're 20 minutes to an hour. That's pretty good. But anyways, that's my list of 25 things I had to Google, or should have probably Googled, because no one taught me. And I think it's good, especially those deep Google thoughts or questions. I think it's good to understand, like, if you were never taught, learn what self-love is or what love looks like or what a healthy relationship looks like, because that could save you from a lot of toxicness, probably. And then obviously learn your toxicness, because you want to bring toxicness to a great guy or a great relationship or a great friendship and ruin it for yourself and sabotage everything. Because that was me. I was a sabotager as well. But just know you're not alone. I hope I'm not alone in Googling these, or should have Googled these. But I would love for anyone that would like to tell me something you had to learn the hard way. You can send me a message on Instagram at Shifting the Narrative Without an E. Comment or share this episode with a friend who would definitely relate. And remember, it's okay to not have all the answers. I still don't have all the answers, obviously, because I just told you I should visit my therapist on some of these questions that I had. But just keep learning, growing, and laughing at the journey along the way, because laughter, it's good to laugh. It makes you feel better eventually, you know, at the end. But I will see you next time. Remember, you are worthy, you are enough, and you are not alone. I am here for you. And if there's any woman that would love to share their story, feel free to message me again. Message me also, and we can create a time, and you can share your story on the podcast, and maybe you can help someone. So, with that being said, I hope everyone has an awesome day.